CataractCoach.com podcast series, episode number 163, with Dr. Din T. Hong An and Dr. Yuri Kalinikov. Why PDEC is the best way to do lamellar corneal transplantation.
Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. And today, I've got two very special guests. I have Dr. Din T. Hong An from Vietnam, and we have Dr. Yuri Kalinikov from Russia.
Yes, I'm here.
Hello, guys. Welcome to the podcast. We met recently, actually last year in Chennai, India, at Amar Agarwal's meeting, and I was very impressed with a lot of your very advanced anterior segment surgery techniques. So I'd love to talk about those.
Thank you so much, Dr. Uday, for inviting us. I think it's been almost 1 year after that meet, but we were impressed with you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for inviting us. It's a great honor to be here.
Oh, thank you. So, Dr. Yuri, tell me about your practice of ophthalmology and what do you specialize in?
My practice in Moscow, and I studied in Smolensk and studied in medical Smolensk Universitet, located quite far from Moscow. In one of my closest friends was already a student, Professor Fedorov, and encouraged me to consider ophthalmology as a career. Professor Fedorov was a true pioneer, do you know, in the field.
Yes.
He was among the first surgeons to implant intraocular lenses, pioneer of radial keratotomy, designer of phakic, and the developer of non-penetrating deep sclerectomy. In those days, things were simpler. I went directly to him, expressed my interest in ophthalmology, and asked if I could become his student. To my surprise, he agreed.
Wow.
I was honored to work with him until the end of his days. They were challenging but exciting times, and the spirit of innovation in ophthalmologist was incredibly strong.
Now
I have many interests in ophthalmology. Example, keratoplasty. After performing thousands of keratoplasties, I noticed that even then the graft remained perfectly clear. Patients frequently develop significant postoperative astigmatism. In many cases, it's reached 5 or 6 dioptries and much more, which significantly limited visual outcomes. Early techniques attempt to address this problem by placing a ring between the graft and recipient bed. But this technique did not give good results. My idea was to implant the intrastromal corneal ring directly into the corneal graft during keratoplasty. Yeah. This the assistant of femtosecond laser. A canal is created in corneal graft during transplantation, allowing a precise placement of the ring. Future details about this technique can be easily found on PubMed. With our technique, astigmatism in the late postoperative period typically does not exceed 1.5 or 2 dioptries, resulting in significantly better visual quality in the patients. It's my interest now.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's a great idea and really very improved to go from 6 diopters or more of astigmatism to only 1 or 2 is fantastic.
Yes.
And Dr. An, tell us about your practice. Ophthalmology.
Yeah. I would add a bit about Dr. Yuri's practice before because I think that it's a bit difficult for him to speak in English, but so he's one of the main corneal surgeons in Russia. And corneal cataract refractive would be his main specialty. And so I was his PhD student. Mm. So after finishing my PhD, and the subject was on optimized PDEC, which you'd probably remember from the Chennai conference last year. after finishing that, so I came back to Vietnam, and now just with the board of directors, we opened a private eye center. It's called Hong Ngoc Private Eye Center, Hong Ngoc Eye Center. So I'm the head of department there. So of course the main surgeries would be cataract and refractive. But now recently we have started with Professor Yuri also doing keratoplasty in Vietnam. Yeah. So I think that it's quite big also. And we started, and we have recently also done the first PDAC case, first pupilloplasty technique, all, you know, pioneered by Professor Amar. But yeah, that's mainly my job for now.
Tell us a little bit for the audience who doesn't know, what's the difference in PDAC versus what we're doing now, let's just say DMEC? And explain that to us.
So you've also been at Professor Amar's big grand lecture on the difference. But mainly I would say that you used the Duwas layer, which was not known before 2013. And the graft dislocation rate is much lower thanks to the Duwas layer. But the point of our optimized PDAC came to the fact that we tried PDAC first. We tried PDAC in Moscow with Professor Yuri. Tried to do the same everything like on YouTube videos, like real videos. And we got the first, when we tried doing the big bubble, we got the tissue rupture immediately. So that was the reason why we decided to do optimized PDAC. And there's also a big difference. For example, when Professor Amar, he has his own eye bank.
Right.
He can inflate as much as he wants. Corneas. And here we have limited resource of donor corneas, so we had to be very careful. But that first case was failed PDAC, which later Professor Yuri turned into DMEC because he could peel the decimate membrane from the uneventful PDAC. But that was the first attempt. Afterwards, we saw the dual clamp. I don't know if you have seen that. So it was the Professor Duwas invention to increase the rate of success for PDAC.
Right.
So it looks like a Calasian clamp. So it clamps the donor cornea in the middle, and it does not let the air go into the periphery. We also tried that. We understood the idea, but the clamp was, you know, it was not stable on the donor cornea. You know,
right.
Needle goes here, you know, it was not stable. So we continued to optimize it. And afterwards, we got the whole surgical system with the instruments and how to do PDAC graft preparation and preservation technique, for which Professor Amar gave us the gold medal.
Right.
Yeah, so that was a high point for us for that. Yeah. But I don't know if you perform PDAC because it seems to me like you are a very versatile surgeon. You perform everything from complex cataract, glaucoma, you comment on keratoplasty, on everything.
Yeah. I love everything into your segment. I love it all.
Yeah.
Now let me talk. What I really was very impressed with your method of liquid injection, and to avoid problems with like big bubble formation. And explain to us what is your new technique here, which I thought is brilliant.
So the technique. So we had four steps. I would say that first we have four instruments. So the first would be a PDAC. So instead of using just injecting the air, we use a spring-loaded plunger, you know?
Okay.
So it gives a dosage, not like you just inject air like this and it ruptures, but it gives slow amounts of air inside the bubble. And afterwards, Professor Yuri, he insisted on using the storage medium. After you got that little bubble, you put the storage medium, and then it starts to grow bigger you know, in diameter, like very slowly to avoid the tissue rupture. So that is only the first part, you know. We also have the ring fixator to put on top. Also, we have the not just ring fixator, but a special base to put the donor cornea, you know. So it's a whole system, yeah.
Well, I think that's a great idea, because when we just do just air alone, sometimes you can't control it enough and you inject air too forcefully and you'll rupture the tissue.
Yes, we received, I think, the rupture in the very first cases in PDAC in Moscow. Right. Yeah, and it was a big stress for all of us, but Professor Yuri continues.
It's research work of Anne. It's beautiful research work.
Yeah.
We know it's brilliant research work. It's fantastic. So I think, yeah, now starting with the spring-loaded plunger to give a little counter traction, and once you have that little bubble, then switching to the storage medium, so you have liquid injection to slowly enlarge.
Yes.
That's really smart.
But Professor Yuri has also thought of an idea how to preserve it. Like, normally you would cut 360 degrees, you know, for the graft to... So in order to slow to lower the rate of unsuccessful grafts preparation, he offered to the iBanks to not cut 360 degrees, but you left three places uncut.
Mm.
You understand? So,
so it's still a little bit attached, 180 degrees apart. One.
Exactly, yes. So the surgeon in the operating room just needs to cut these three pieces, and the graft is, you know, he doesn't need to inject it, you know, he doesn't need to form the big bubble, he doesn't need to do anything, just cut the three pieces and he has the PDAC graft. Yeah.
Wow, that's great. I will tell you, in Los Angeles, I'm very, very fortunate. I can order my tissue. It already comes whatever I want, the diameter, the size, they already stain it, they already put a direction mark. It's already in the injector ready to use. So I'm very spoiled. It's just, I don't have to do any preparation at all.
We would like to ask you, what is the rate of your keratoplasty performing? We heard that in USA, some people even do cataract with preventive keratoplasty, you know, preventive endothelial keratoplasty.
Yes. There are some surgeons who will do combined at the same time, for sure. But we had on our podcast like an ophthalmologist in the U.S. named Jack Parker, who does an unbelievable number of these. He does maybe 25 or 30 in a day, in a morning. He does them very, very, very efficiently. And so he's doing maybe a couple thousand of these a year. So patients are referred to him from all over the place. And this is, he does this one thing just really beautifully.
Yes,
so I do very little compared to the other people. My practice primarily.
You saved me from one keratoplasty. Is your video on decimates detachment? Right. I had the exact same situation. So I did my irrigation aspiration, then wounds hydration in the end, and suddenly I see a big decimate flap. You know, I'm like, okay, so. I'm like, from where should I put the air, you know, like from where? And so I remembered your video, you say, you know, do not put the air from the main incision, put it from the paracentesis opposite. And then thankfully, I escaped one endothelial keratoplasty thanks to your video.
Yeah, it's surprisingly, in routine cataract surgery, there's more decimate attachments, maybe even small ones, but sometimes big ones, more than we think.
Yes. So how do you prevent post-operative astigmatism in keratoplasty in your practice?
So luckily for me, I do very little of full thickness transplants for these. So in Los Angeles, I tend to just refer those out. It's easier for me to have someone else do it. I like to learn about everything. And this is why I keep up with all the glaucoma things, all the cornea things, all the refractive things. My practice itself is 80% cataract, maybe 20% refractive.
Oh.
Or maybe 80% cataract, 15% refractive, and then 5% other, which would be like unusual cases sent in, anterior chamber reconstruction. like the cases you've done. Like I actually liked Dr. Yuri's pupilloplasty gauge for doing pinopupilloplasty. So you obviously also do a lot of these very challenging anterior segment reconstruction cases also.
Yes. Can I speak a bit to Dr. Yuri in Russian?
So, absolutely, whatever you want.
Yeah. Расскажите сейчас про пин-код. Вот.
Oh, it's a very interesting technique, pinhole pupilloplasty. In 2 years ago in Chennai, we saw this technique, and now we use these techniques quickly and often. Right. It's very good technique for difficult cases. And we designed special surgical gauges that measure the pinhole size directly in the pupillary plane, allowing more precision results. We have performed many optimized pinhole pupilloplasty surgeries in Russia and Vietnam and received good results. We have good video for last our patient with young girl, 10 old. She have scar of cornea in center. And what we must to do, pinhole pupilloplasty or keratoplasty? And we used pinhole pupilloplasty, and her visual acuity was 0.05, and after operation, 0.7.
Wow.
It's fantastic. We can show our video, and we will see our work. It's good technique. I think Dr. Agarwal, it's a great surgeon. He has many techniques, but pinhole pupilloplasty is last great technique which Dr. Agarwal made in our practice. Yes.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great idea. So in a case like this, you have a 10-year-old girl, central corneal scar. Are you going to do a cornea transplant on this young child? How long will it even last? Will you get the tissue? So the better idea was, just Agarwal's ideas, once these patients are pseudophakic, to make a pinhole of the pupil, suturing very small, usually about 1.5, maybe 2 millimeters. And we can talk about the size of the pupil. But yes, you can also make it somewhat off-center to bypass the scar. So in like your case, the patient went from 20 out of 400 vision to 20 out of 30 vision, which is just incredible.
And yeah. Dr. An in Vietnam, pinhole pupilloplasty. It's very interesting. She have very interesting. She can tell us about this case.
Sure. Tell me.
I'd like to add a bit on about Dr. Yuri's gauge. I don't know if you have heard the idea behind it.
Tell me.
So before, how do you measure the pupil size? You know, how do you know it's 1.5 or 1.0 or whatever the size that you want? So Dr. Amar showed us before that he had an epsilon. I think you also saw.
Right.
The epsilon triangle or something like that, and he has little holes like this, like 1.25, maybe 1.5, you know, and up to 3 millimeters. And so that thing he put just on the surface of the cornea, you know, like under the microscope, he puts that on the surface of the cornea to see what was the resulting pupil size. But then, so Dr. Yuri tried that, and he saw that from the cornea, when you measure like it, you know, it doesn't give you the exact pupil size in reality, you know, by ASOCT. So Dr. Yuri thought of, I think he designed and gave it as a gift to Dr. Amar. He called it a gauge, but actually it's an instrument that you put through paracentesis, you know, like almost like a spatula.
Okay.
With two hemicircle sphere like that.
Yes.
You know, so one is 0.5 and one is 0.75. 0.75, which is half of one and half of 1.5. So he made the instrument for both left hand and right hand, you know, so you can see exactly at that plane, a pupillary plane, so you get the result that you want. I think that's the most interesting part about the optimized pinhole pupilloplasty. Yeah,
right, because if you're measuring on the cornea,
yeah,
it's not going to be the exact same in the anterior chamber, because you are right, you have the whatever change in magnification from the cornea. So this is a smart idea. This is to measure right there on top of the iris. So you put it in your paracentesis.
Yeah.
And it's like, it looks like a spatula with two half semicircles kind of cut out of it. And then one is for overall diameter, 1.0 millimeters, one for 1.5. And then you can judge, lay it on top of the iris and see how is your pupil, where it is. Now, let's talk about this. What's the ideal size then? I saw some of your work, you liked fit, the ideal size was maybe 1.8 millimeters, you like 1.7. How do you figure this out?
Какой для вас лучший размер?
The best size of pinhole gauge, 1.5. It's universal. It's for many patients. It's the best. But Epsilon tools for preoperative exam, it's good for post-operative result.
I think that there was already a publication of Dr. Priya with Dr. Amar on what size is the best. So I don't think that we even need to try to find what size is the best. But there was recently a case of also pinhole pupilloplasty we performed. So the patient had perforating ocular trauma 1 year ago, and he has corneal scar also, central corneal scar. He has big, large iris laceration.
Mm-hmm.
Afterwards, the first surgeon at the other hospital took out his lens and took out the vitreous, you know, so like vitrectomy and lens extraction was done. So that patient came to us. And so we had to perform keratoplasty, of course, but because there was such a big iris laceration that we had to perform pupilloplasty. But and also IOL fixation to the iris. But what's interesting is that the iris laceration was so big that me and Professor Yuri, we could not do like 1.5. Okay. Like it could not be the perfect, but it was 1.8 in vertical, you know, horizontal, 2.0. But the patient still saw so much better after the
sure, of course.
Which size the best for patient with whole aberration? If patients have whole aberration, this size 1.5 is the best pupil. Pinhole pupilloplasty for this case is good surgery.
Right. Yes, you can reduce the higher order aberrations that have an effect, because with the pinhole, you could have some of the very high amount of HOA or higher order aberrations. And then with the pinhole, the effective one is like 10% of that. You've addressed or blocked 90% of it, which is great.
Do you do many pinhole pupilloplasty in your practice?
In my practice, very few. Maybe one or two a year.
Oh, not so many trauma, I understand. Yeah,
yeah, it's, you know, Los Angeles is a very big city. In where my clinic is in Beverly Hills, it's a fancy part of the town. There's not a lot of trauma.
Dr. Uday, I think they must present you our pinhole gauge, and we will perform many pinhole pupilloplasty.
We'll send it as a gift, yes, to LA.
That's a great idea. Now, when you're doing this and suturing it, are you doing the Agarwal's fourth throw pupilloplasty, the suturing.
Yes, style. Yes, yes. This good technique.
And then 10-0 polypropylene.
Yes, 10 or 9, maybe 10 or 9.
Okay, and then we talked about already the pupil size. Sometimes we can make it off center to avoid the scar, but yes. How do you recommend choosing where to center the pupil?
Then pupil size 1 millimeters. Mm-hmm. This pupil may be not center and not center. Visual will be good.
That's good. Yeah, that's important to know because a lot of these people do have very central corneal scars. And so you'll have to shift the pupil, you know, off axis just a little bit. But if it's a small 1 millimeter pupil that you've created, it really is very flexible, very forgiving. You can move it around anywhere in the center and they do fine.
Yes. For example, for the center, so Professor Yuri said that he'll use the Purkinje image from the microscope to make it short.
Purkinje 1.
P1. Yeah. Mm-hmm. P1. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Now, how do you take extra care if sometimes after trauma, the iris is a little bit atrophied? And I found that in the past, if I put a suture, we call it cheese wire, cuts through the tissue.
It's a problem, but we have IOL, IOL, PPIOL, which only 2 suture for fixation with IOL on pupil. This IOL have size optic 1.5. It's our new work in this.
So you can do a combination of
pupilloplasty.
Yeah, in this case, you can do a combination of both. Put your IOL that has a pinhole 1.5, one whatever, put that in the capsular bag, and then suture the iris. And even if you don't have complete closure of the iris because of atrophy, it's still blocked by the IOL.
You understood everything.
but my question is, everyone will ask, because I get this question asked also, well, how do you examine the retina?
Retina must be showed before operation.
Yes.
Before operation. But we can YAC laser, which help us pinhole pupilloplasty made big pupil.
Right. Yeah, you can, if you need to, in your clinic, use the YAG laser to break a few sutures and then have a bigger pupil if you need to examine the retina.
But never tried.
No, these cases.
But that's obviously the challenge, right? It's just I think you can sometimes image, at least view part of the retina. Small pupil, but it's hard to see like retina periphery. You'll never be able to see through a 1.5 millimeter pupil.
When we had also this question when we went to Dr. Amar to see the technique, and he just showed us that he has Mirante, you know, the Mirante.
Mirante is a good decision in these cases.
So yeah, that's a wide field imaging that can go through the very small pupil.
Yeah,
that's for sure now.
So that's why our clinic also bought Mirante, you know. because when, for example, you do keratoplasty and pinhole pupilloplasty, I always fear to do YAC laser because, you know, you just suture the cornea and then you press the cornea you do the laser. Will the corneal sutures, you know, like be messed up? I don't know. So I've never tried, but in theory, I think it's possible.
Now, you sometimes will do very complex cases where you'll do, we call the triple. You'll do the cataract surgery, put the IOL in the bag, and you'll do the pinhole pupilloplasty, and you'll do the PDEC.
So with we saw many cases like that of Professor Amar, yeah? But I think that we have done one similar case like that in Russia. One, yes. Okay. But in Vietnam, we still have not. When it was just PDEC, So the patient had endothelial keratoplasty because he had cataract surgery before, which was uneventful. But so IOL was already there. The pupil is normal. So no need for doing that. But anyways, yes, it would be extremely complicated surgery, like you say.
Right, you can do everything at once, but you make sure you do it in that order. Cataract first with IOL, then pupilloplasty, then last step doing PDAC.
Yes. I don't know if, have you tried doing 3-in-1 surgery like that?
I have not. Usually, that's a lot to do at once. And sometimes it's easier to do it staged, do a little bit at a time. Do the cataract and pupilloplasty, wait a little bit, wait a few months. You can always come back, and I think it'll be easier to do the PDAC later then.
Yes, but is PDAC a popular technique in USA or still not very well accepted?
I think DMEC is much more popular. So, but I think all these things, it always takes time to change. You remember 15 years ago, it was only DSEC. No one did DMEC.
Yes.
So it just slowly with time, things change and then people keep advancing. Now, I would love to know, how did you end up deciding to go from Vietnam to go to Russia to do your PhD, your extra training there?
Yeah. So many people also ask that question. Firstly, there is mutual agreement between Vietnam and Russia for education. You know, I hope that there would be agreement between Vietnam and India or Vietnam and USA, but now mostly Vietnam and Russia. But so I studied medical university already in Russia because my parents and grandparents, they also studied in Russia. It was a tradition.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. My grandfather was the first to go to Russia to study. So that's how. But then how did I met Professor Yuri? I actually didn't know him before. I went to ESCRS 2018, and I heard about the PDAC idea, you know. I thought that I must explore it, like, I just must, you know. It was so fascinating. But you cannot find so many people who are willing to try, you know, new ideas, because it brings certain risks to the practice, you know. And at that time, maybe for Professor Amar, it was obvious, Dua Slayer, no Dua Slayer, but for other part of the world, it was not that obvious, you know. So right. I was searching for a professor who was willing to go with me, and also for a smiley professor, you know, not a grumpy, too strict.
Yes, so, you have to enjoy.
I also like your podcast because you start with a very bright energy, you know, like it makes people already have a better mood. So normally you imagine a Russian person very strict and moody, you know, like in movies, you know, but Professor Yuri was nothing like that. So I would say it was more that he was so smiley and he was a corneal surgeon. So 2-in-1, you know.
That's fantastic. Now, you're practicing in Vietnam. I actually first went to Vietnam 20 years ago, 2006. Wow. I taught, there was a meeting called the Imperial City Eye Meeting in Hue.
Wow. And
I taught there 20 years ago, 2006. I've been there 4 or 5 times. I'll be back actually coming this July again in Hue. I'll be in Vietnam. Yeah, July 21, 22, 23, we have the Imperial City Eye Meeting again.
Is it for a conference or for
all ophthalmologists of Vietnam? Yes, we're doing it. Yes, so I was always impressed when I was in Vietnam that there's a lot of very advanced cataracts. A lot. Like if you are a cataract surgeon in Vietnam, you will do white cataract and brunescent cataracts every day.
I think that is because of the just that old people, you know, in rural areas, like in India also, yeah. They don't have access. Vietnamese doctors are very skilled with hands, but what they lack, I think, is the research exposure or like the exposure to, of course, we all watch your videos, you know, sure. Like it's all our educational, we talk to each other. You know, what about the last case, why the IOL did not open correctly, you know, what was the reason? But I think that what we lack here is the educational platform. So please, it would be our honor to also invite you to Vietnam and to our clinic. Just clear the schedule and I would ask the clinic to invite you. It would be a huge, huge, huge event. Yes.
Oh, I think that's great. Yeah, the world is changing now. Education is the same worldwide and it's on your mobile phone.
Yes.
In high definition. So wherever you are, you can learn from the same videos, the same lectures everywhere worldwide. That's the beauty of it. And now with these new apps, you can even have it translate.
Even in Russia, they learn with the blocked internet from you.
Yeah, you have to use a proxy. But you can certainly get around it. Yeah, I look at the, we have a lot of viewers, like even from China, where it's also blocked. YouTube, they use a VPN or proxy, and they get around it.
But can you tell us how did the idea come to you, like to do such kind of videos? You know, how did it start in the beginning?
Well, I've been making videos for a long, long time. So if you look carefully on YouTube, there's videos from me in low definition from almost 20 years ago.
Wow.
So right when YouTube started, maybe 17, 18 years ago. But then about 8 years ago in 2018, I thought, wow, you know, it'd be nice if I had all my teaching material in one place. So I said, let me decide, what do I want to make? I said, I don't want to be cataract professor. I want to be cataract coach, because coaches, like, everyone needs a coach. When I watch TV and I see the world's best tennis player, Roger Federer, incredible tennis, but he still has a coach. Because as good as he is, he wants to be better.
Yes.
And so then I thought everyone should have a cataract coach. And then I liked the way it sounded, cataractcoach.com, CCC, cataractcoach.com. So I decided to make a new video. And I said, I was going to make one a week. But then I said, can I do one video a day? Can I do one? And so the answer is yes. Because now 2,000, almost 900 days later, I still never miss a day. So I have a new video every single day. And then I started off with just cataract, but then I want to learn everything anterior segment. So we cover cataract, glaucoma, cornea, refractive, and complex anterior segment surgery as well. And then I have a sister channel now called retinarounds.com, where the retina, it's my colleague, Dr. Pradeep Prasad, who does retina, and he does retina videos and retina podcasts. So we got the whole life covered. Now what we need is I need to find some young, strong ophthalmologist who's going to do orbit, oculoplastics, and strabismus. Yes. I need those. I don't have those.
You know, but what we love is that normally, for example, even when Professor Yuri is doing surgery or when I'm studying him, you know, when the surgeon is doing surgery, you're afraid to ask too many questions, you know, like not to be too noisy. Right. And you ask those questions for us, you know, like, and you comment for us. It's like, you know, it's like you're reading our mind, but for everyone. Yes.
And so thank you very much. Of course, there's so much to learn. I learn more than I teach. There's so much to learn. Today's video, if you see Cataract Coach, this video is unbelievable. And the first time I watched the video, I missed the problem. It's a case where the capsular bag breaks open.
Yes.
But it was so subtle that I had to go back and watch the video in slow motion to actually see it. And so I put it as a quiz. I said, 99% of ophthalmologists will get this wrong because I got it wrong. So
do you have many residents now?
I used to. I don't anymore. So for 22 years, from the year 2000 until 2022, I would have residents every week. I would teach. We had a big program at UCLA. Where it was 8 residents per year, it's a total of 4 years, so a total of 32 residents. And so a lot of good, very smart, very good residents. But a few years ago, I had to change gears. I had to do things, maybe different direction. Cataract Coach got very busy. I'm traveling a lot more. Like I said, I'll be in Vietnam in July, but just the weekend before, I'm in Taiwan lecturing. The weekend after, I'll be in Bangalore, India lecturing there.
Dream life.
It's all I know. So there's obviously a lot of travel there for me to get around and, you know, meet all these ophthalmologists, learn from them, learn together. So it's for me, it's a lot of fun.
But can I ask you, who was your coach? Like,
my podcast guest number one, Dr. Bobby Osher.
Bob Osher, yeah.
Bob Osher is, to me, is the godfather.
Yes.
He is his brains, his idea to use video to teach surgeons. When, long ago, almost 30 years ago when I was a resident, 1997, 98, 99, I would borrow these VHS videotapes of Osher's Video Journal of Cataract Surgery. And I would, and he made it four times a year, every quarter, every 3 months, there's a new video. And I would watch it again and again and again. So he changed ophthalmology. He showed that, yes, you can learn from videos. And then he also was very brave in that he innovated a lot of things. And he made it okay to show your complications. Don't just show the beautiful surgery. Show the surgery where you had a complication and a problem. And how did you solve the problem?
So we remembered last time how funny it was when you were at the judges and the Chennai. You know, and you like looking and you know, giving comments on the surgery. It's like, you know, it's like real life cataract coach. Reality,
but I think that makes everyone a better surgeon. If we all learn from our complications and show the complications, here's the problem, here's what happened, what should we do now? We can learn from that.
But we learned before that you had also Indian origin. I mean, did you study in India before?
No, I'm 100% American.
Oh.
100% American. My elementary school, my grade school, my high school is 10 kilometers from my clinic. I spent my whole life right here in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay. But have you ever come to Russia, you know?
Long ago.
Long ago.
I used to travel a lot for ophthalmology 20 years ago. Like I said, when I was in Vietnam in 2006. So in 2003 to maybe 2008 or 9, I traveled a lot also back then.
Oh.
A lot.
Hue is my town.
Like, oh, really?
I'm from Hue, yes.
The Perfume River. I love that place.
It's very calming, you know. And there are many heritage now, even more beautiful than I think 10 years ago where you've been.
Beautiful place. Yeah, certainly. If you're listening to this podcast and you would like to come and speak at our meeting in Hue, please contact me, email me. happy to invite you. It'll be a great time. But no, it's a beautiful place. And what I loved was just the enthusiasm to learn. The young surgeons there really want to learn.
There is a Central Hue Hospital. They're quite good. Yeah.
They're the ones sponsoring our meeting.
Ah, that's where you're going.
We'll probably do it at a hotel, hotel meeting convention, but the sponsored by Hue Central Hospital.
Please let me book you one day in Hanoi.
Okay. Yeah. I'll have to come visit you for sure.
Yeah. I will bring Professor Yuri to Hanoi when you come. Yes.
Yes. We must to be in Hanoi together.
I would love it.
Well, in Moscow too.
Yes, my favorite part of Vietnam is probably the world's best seafood.
Oh, yeah. You've been to Hue. Have you visited Hoi An?
Yes, beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. Yeah, Hoi An is very beautiful. Yeah, beautiful country. I had a great time visiting. But, yeah. And then I just realized to cross the street, just don't look. But keep the same speed. You walk the same speed and all the motorcycles will just go around you. You don't have to worry. Just don't look.
Big traffic jam, yes. But, for example, in Hue, you feel a lot of history. But also in Hanoi, you feel a lot of history. I mean, no matter what happened in the past between our countries, Vietnamese people are still very welcoming, you know, warm and friendly for tourists. I think that especially when you come, everyone will be asking where you're from, you know, would be so nice.
It'll be absolutely great. Well, I'm really impressed with all the work that you're doing. I mean, these cases are amazing. I have a few more important questions to talk about. These are my important questions about the pupilloplasty and the surgical techniques. So let's talk about this one, the learning curve. So if you have a surgeon, a young surgeon is listening to the podcast, and that surgeon says, you know, I have this patient who would benefit from pinhole pupilloplasty. How do you start? What are the important ideas or technique that you have to do? And then what common mistake will they make?
I translate a bit.
Sure.
Он спрашивает, что если вы начинаете, начинающий хирург, который хочет делать пупилопластику, да, какие да. ошибки может, да, с чего начинать, вот.
Ну, может, переведешь тогда ты, да? Или
Давай,
мне сказать?
I translate, yeah. Okay.
Да, в пупилопластике вот такие же четкие конкретные шаги, как и при фокомульсификации.
He says that for pupilloplasty you have very precise steps like phaco emulsification.
Это касается диагностики перед операцией, выбора диаметра, размера отверстия и именно показана ли пупилопластика этому пациенту.
It starts even before the surgery from the diagnostics. Is this patient suitable for pinhole pupilloplasty? And what is the size that is
Она
suitable for that patient?
Не всем показана пупилопластика.
Not если everyone есть... suitable for pinhole pupilloplasty.
Да, если есть изменения сетчатки, если есть другие какие-то проблемы, в основном это показано при высоких операциях и при изменениях роговицы. Вот тогда показано. Затем.
So you have like glaucoma, you know, but even I heard that Dr. Amar still do it with glaucoma. But if you have retina problems, so that's not a good indication for pinhole pupilloplasty, yeah.
Очень важна техника наложения швов на радужку. Она...
It's very important to know the iris suture.
Да, вот это четко должна выполняться. Радужка должна собираться к центру этими швами.
He says that thanks to the suture, the iris, the pinhole must go to the center. You know, must try to...
Причем не за край радужки, не за зрачок, а за основание радужки как бы. Понимаешь, да?
Не за край радужки.
Не за край вот зрачка это собирается, а вот больше как бы за основную часть радужки.
So you not do not take the iris near the pupil, he says, but you take the iris even from the iris body already, you know, periphery to the center. Yeah.
И потом при помощи витреотома формируется точечное отверстие четко в соответствии с Пуркинье 1.
So you use the obturator to make the pinhole exactly at the place where the Purkinje image 1 is located.
И great pearls. Yeah. I think for me the mistake I made was not getting a strong enough bite of the iris because they can have some iris atrophy, so you want to make sure that your suture pass through the iris is getting the stroma of the iris. So you can really hold it together. And then the idea, yes, is you can close the whole pupil completely, then use the vitrector to then create your 1.5 millimeter pupil in that spot you want.
I think that's a very nice insight that you just gave us, that you can close the whole iris, you know, and then just use the vitrector. We need exactly the same like you just said, like few days before, yeah.
Yeah, I think the patients can be then very happy. The learning curve is not easy. It's not easy at all. So,
did you get the iris, you know, that you pull it so much that, you know, you get some hyphema, or have you ever encountered that?
That's a very important thing. So when you're pulling the iris out of the angle, bring it centrally, you have to be very careful to not disinsert the iris root. Because otherwise you can pull off the iris root, you can get bleeding from this, a hyphema from this. So you've got to be very, very slow and deliberate. The surgery will take longer than you think. So do a retrobulbar block for the patient. I do retrobulbar block with both lidocaine and bupivacaine. So it lasts a long time. Uh-huh. And then just take your time. it's going to, if you think it's going to take you 30 minutes, it will take 1 hour. If you think it's going to take you 1 hour, it's going to take 2 hours. So it's my last surgery of the day, so I don't have to worry. So I do all the easy surgeries first, all the cataract, you know, do 20, 30 cataracts, whatever. And then at the end of the day, let's just do this one case.
Oh, вы поняли, да?
Не совсем до конца.
Да. Но он сказал то, что нужно очень деликатно. А
транслейтер? Да, все правильно. It's right, yes.
And then finally, I mean, the last thing with PDEC, I think what you've done there now, you have a huge success. I think it was, you said 95% success rate with PDEC, which is amazing. And so in the future, do you think we can help to automate this big bubble fluid injection technique for all the iBanks so they can do it for us?
We actually are hoping that it would become the technique that iBanks use. Currently, it's only in some places, you know, like Russia or Vietnam. It's not being used, you know, largely. So in USA, we know that it's the largest number of iBanks there. So maybe they would start to adopt it. We know that the Alliance iBank has some sort of their own technique for preparing PDEC grafts. I don't know what is the repeatability rate, but in our case, so it was 95%, so we were very happy, yeah.
PDEC better than DMEC.
Yes.
In our practice, only PDEC.
Yeah, I think Dr. Agarwal says the same, that PDEC is certainly a better procedure than DMEC. And in his clinic, it's only PDEC. And I think in the US, we'll do the same. We were DSEC, then we went DMEC, and now we'll go PDEC. There's just an evolution that takes time.
PDEC better than DSEC and then DMEC.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
So, they would be very happy to hear that.
If you have a video of this, we're happy to feature the video on Cataract Coach to show this technique or any surgical technique. Just send me the video. Happy to feature it.
So we have sent you before the pinhole pupilloplasty. Yeah. I don't know if it's possible that you add it in this podcast. Sure. You do it separately, but we'll send you also our optimized PDEC.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. We'll feature it the day after the podcast. My podcast is every Sunday.
Yes.
The video for the day after, the Monday right after, will feature your video.
Yes. Thank you so much, Dr. Uday. It's a great, great, great honor for us, you know. Before, we just saw you on videos, and last year we got to see you in real person. You are much, much more funner. You know, you're already fun on podcast. But
thank you very much, Dr. Uday. Thank you very much. Very interesting for me.
Thank you, guys. I was a fun discussion. I learned a lot. Thank you again for doing this podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Professor Uday. And I hope to see you in Hue in July in Hanoi. We would talk about that. Yes.
And Chennai in July.
Sounds good, Dr. Uri. I want to remind our listeners and viewers, remember, we got a new Cataract Coach podcast every Sunday on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Google. Everywhere you find a podcast, you find the Cataract Coach podcast. And of course, we have a new Cataract Coach video every single day. So until next time, I'll catch you later. Okay.